All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me this week, riding as my co-host, is a former co-host of mine a long time ago, many, many moons ago, almost probably a decade ago, we hosted.
Yeah, it's terrifying to say, isn't it?
Yeah, Lance Brozdowski. You heard his voice, so I'll give you the full intro. But yeah, it's been a long time. We were chasing Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s prospects and Rafael Devers and Brendan Rodgers. That's kind of the less
Sean Reed Foley. There's some deep cut names there, man. Yeah, see, I'm getting you.
Harold Ramirez, like the entire New Hampshire team, they had like six or seven big leaguers. Even Jonathan Davis got up to the show. So we have some history. We've been talking baseball for a long time. Of course, you know him from Marquee and, you know, his coverage with the Cubs. But also, I think probably my favorite baseball newsletter at the moment. Pitching breakdowns. Anyone that's not subscribed to that, I encourage you to subscribe. But just your pitching breakdowns of minor leaguers. You've mixed in some college stuff, but primarily like the major leagues. And as somebody who has to watch 4 to 6 minor league games during a day, you know, this time of year, I can max with the DSL games on YouTube in the morning.
So. Oh, yeah.
I'm constantly watching ball, but I don't see as much MLB as I probably want to. So I can't necessarily dive into some of these pitchers. You do a great job of kind of like breaking down arsenal changes and just, you know, sort of execution, like, you know, a lot of different factors, obviously, with pitching. There's so much that goes into it, and I won't break down every detail, but I think you do a great job there. I think it's very worth reading. And I always love your prospect breakdowns. You obviously have some history covering prospects as well. So I know that it comes from a place of, you know, a lot of knowledge and experience. So I wanted to bring you on the show today, and I threw some names at you, and we're going to dive into some of these different pitching prospects and get your thoughts on it. And we'll talk some data, we'll talk some performance, and just sort of overall thoughts on where these guys are going to end up.
Let's do it, man. Yeah, I'm excited for this. This is going to be a lot of fun. I do feel like I'm sure you're the same way, but the way you like look at pitching prospects has probably changed. My approach to pitching prospects is been different over the last couple of years. I would say that I go through like waves of it just because I have to like balance. Like I do a lot of MLB coverage and that's where my brain's at for a couple months. And then, you know, early season will update my like top 40, top 50 pitching prospect list. And then I'll dive really heavy into draft stuff for 2 months and prep for MLB Network work. And then I'll come out of that, go back to MLB. And then now in this moment in time, I'm like just about to get back into more of like the deep dive prospect stuff to update my top 50. And so I haven't broached that yet. I cracked open the file and I started like doing the graduations, which I'm sure you're familiar with, of like, this guy's not here anymore and I have to rank him, which is lovely sometimes. And also like, how's Jonah Tong not graduated yet? Is like very frustrating. You know what I mean? So, you know, the waves of the season for me have definitely changed, but yeah, I guess I think I approach pitching prospects maybe a little different because I am out of the loop a lot of the time with who has who where. You know, like I definitely lock on the bigger early season updates, but I intentionally try not to look at lists prior to my updates. And then I'll go at like right after I do my list, I'll look at everybody's, you know, so I'm blind to like where you guys have a lot of these names, unless you've kept them where they were early in the year. So this will be fun. I'll stop really rambling. We could get going.
Yeah, no, I mean, they all kind of move around. And I think, you know, it's different, too, because your list is like your personal list where.
Sure. You know, yeah, yours is like an aggregate, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of industry feedback that, you know, we're constantly getting when it's siloed within an org, and that kind of feeds into like, you know, that kind of tributaries that feed into the bigger stream of like the top 100 and all those sort of rankings. This time of year, you kind of fold in draft stuff, which I have very little to do with sort of like ranking and grading. And then, you know, there's sort of like, some systems, some guys that you're ahead on, other guys you're maybe a little behind on. So it's like this give and take all the time where my personal list systems, top 100s, like looks different than even some of the lists that like I publish, like my top 30s. Like if I don't get enough scout feedback on a particular guy, like I can't necessarily like shove him up the board. Like a famous one was nobody had Davis Schneider as a top 30 prospect a few years ago prior to like his breakout. And like, if you look at the underlying data and the performance, it was like, well, in a bad system, this guy's got to at least be like top 20.
Yeah.
And so I put him on there with no feedback. That so there are times that like I'll move a guy on, but I would say that like my personal opinions, probably differ a little bit from like even what we have on the site. Like there's certain
prospects. I think that's good though.
Yeah. And I think that's what's interesting about it is you get the kind of a spectrum of opinions.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. You know, it's just you got to get a lot of information, I think, before guys get like.
Do you guys have like a scoreboard? Is there like an internal doc where it's like, oh yeah, in 24, Jeff had this guy here and he actually ended up being here? Like I think I would keep score if I was working at VA.
We sort of know. Like there's certain guys that are like your guys. And I think there's other players there where we have like a general consensus on.
Yeah, gotcha.
But I also think there's like a difference in like feedback versus like what our opinions are. And sometimes like they contrast. Like I think that's something that like I don't always agree with, like even like smart people I talk to. Like there's times where I vehemently disagree about a particular player here or there. I'm not going to throw out any, you know, particular examples, but that happens. That said, let's start it off with, I think it's the theme New Hampshire, right? Like I have some history there. We'll start out with New Hampshire's native son here, Liam Doyle, was of course a first round pick of the Cardinals. Back in 2025, there were a ton of top of the draft college pitchers this year. So far, I would say Cade Anderson is the only one that's really like kind of ascended to that Chase Burns, Paul Skeens. He hasn't been moved as fast, but a guy that like, okay, he came right into pro ball. He looks phenomenal. He looks like he's MLB ready right from the jump. That has not been the case with Doyle. He has been a lot better of late. I'll just throw these numbers at you before we start the breakdown. But last eight starts, he had a phenomenal start last night. Arguably, he sat down the first 14 batters he faced. Arguably, it was maybe the best I've ever seen Liam Doyle. Even dating back to his time at Tennessee, his secondaries were in the zone. That's kind of been a big point of contention for him this year, just in terms of is he controlling, you know, the splitter is in his couple of breaking ball shapes. It's not always consistently there, but last eight starts, 39.2 innings, 23 hits, 8 earned runs, 22 walks, 51 Ks. That's a 1.82 ERA, 1.69 batting average against, 32.1% K rate, 13.8% walk rate. So the walks are still there. The command is still a question, but he's missing bats and getting outs in a difficult league. So what are your thoughts on Doyle at this point?
Big fan. Yeah, I like him a lot. I had him at number 4 on my top 50 when I updated that 3 months ago, 4 months ago, whatever, like late May, early May. Yeah, he's fun, man. I think he's a really good pitcher. I guess I'm fading a little bit of the walk side of things in my assumption that I'm not totally worried about it. I know it's more average strike average zone. I do feel like lefties can get away with a little more out of zone than righties a lot of the time. And I think as a general, like very high level template, it's cool and also probably the correct way to really bet on four seam shape. I think even some of the orgs I've talked to that are more anti four seam, I think like the Marlins are doing this in the minors where they're just fading it in the majors as well. Like I think even they internally are just like, yeah, we hate four seam fastballs, but there are forcing fastballs that we will throw 45 to 55% of the time. It's just they're few and far between. And I think a lot of pitching prospect ranks is trying to identify those guys. And then once you identify them, looking at the ones you think have a little bit of an ability to get on the side of the ball and hold velo, create some kind of like hard depth or have some kind of arm side option that is good. And then those are the guys that end up like top 10 for me most of the time on my lists. This list in particular is a little weirder. I think there aren't a ton of those guys, or the ones that do exist, I think are a little further off. That's why I have Seth Hernandez one. I think he has both these traits we're talking about. Kate, I know we were actually texting before this list came out. I had Cade Anderson one. I flipped it again, both same tier to me. We're splitting hairs, but Doyle, I like a lot. Like, I just think the four seems great. I have him sitting 96. It's like 19 and 9 arm side. Year over year, I see that he kind of shifted on the rubber a little, moved over towards the first base side. It seems like that kicked up his slot a little. That made the four seam a little better in the stuff model I have that kind of grades out the shape. He added like introvert and took a little bit of arm side away. And it also seems like it affected his breakers a little. He's got a little more like depth drop on him. I got like a short one at like 86-ish, like zero vertical, like 7 horizontal. So it's like in between that babyish angle of baby sweeper, I guess you could call it if you want to subcategorize a sweeper. I did talk to someone in the Cardinals org that told me that is two shapes. I don't know if you have tagged us too, but I often run into this where the data I get is a little bit messy in terms of parsing out, especially like tight gyro breaking ball shapes. So I do yeah. believe there's like a little bit slower of a depthier kind of sweeper curve option in there. But yeah, I like it, man. I think it's a good pitcher.
Yeah, it's like it's a gyro that's kind of blended in the numbers with like a more of a slurvy kind of breaking ball. That's a little bit like a little bit longer in terms of horizontal. Where this is like a gyro that almost has like a cut gyro where it has like 3 or 4 inches of like horizontal, but it's kind of like zero vert, you know? So it kind of moves and kind of looks like a gyro at times. But he throws it hard, throws the splitter hard. The splitter was a good pitch, even at Tennessee. He just didn't need to like throw it a ton. And the thing about that, the sliders, that's pretty encouraging is the spin rates are like above average. So there is like some spin capacity there. He's mixed in a cutter as well, in the high 80s. So there's some depth, some arsenal depth here. He's actually thrown his secondaries more as a professional than he did at Tennessee, where he was like 70% fastballs. It's not quite that high any longer. But the angles are working. He's throwing more strikes, you know, and just seems to be attacking sort of the right zones. With a slider staying off the middle of the plate, which was a bit of an issue early in the season. So, yeah, I've been a Liam Doyle fan. It seemed like it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, but they've been rolling out new pitches, trying different things. So I think it's one of those kind of keep the faith. So still a top 50 prospect for us. I think he's kind of moved back and forth 10 spots throughout the year. But certainly if you look at what he's been doing in the second half of the year and over those last 2 months, he's been phenomenal. She said fastball shape has always been really, really good. He attacks with that pitch, and there's just not a lot of lefties that sit 95, 96 that can touch 99, 100 miles per hour, with really good angles and, you know, can consistently land it. So I think that's one thing that obviously separates Doyle. And across the arsenal, he's got a bunch of high swing and strike rates and high in zone whiff rates as well, which, you know, plays well. So, I mean, the more he's in the zone, I think he's still going to miss bats. It's that kind of stuff. You bet on it. I agree with you on the walks. Like, you know, does it maybe limit like what the upside is at the present? Sure. There could be some rough outings here and there, but I think ultimately he's going to get a lot of outs and probably be a really successful sort of five and dive pitcher early before, you know, he gets a little bit more refinement, which happens for a lot of these guys in the big leagues too. Let's move on to the next one that we're going to talk about. Jonathan Santucci. I guess we're discussing New England based pitchers here, because this guy's from Massachusetts. I think I was going to say Chelmsford, but I don't think it's Chelmsford that he grew up in. It might be Fitchburg, but somewhere in that area. Santucci, you know, left-hander, big stuff, big slider, was pretty good at Duke. I think everyone wanted to bet on the athlete and that there was, you know, some more projection here. I think this year in particular, I think he's kind of turned a corner more and is really being viewed as, you know, one of the top pitching prospects in the game. So I know you mentioned before the show that you were a Santucci fan. So talk me through what you like about Santucci.
Yeah, I liked him even when there were no strikes, and there still aren't a ton of strikes. So this is like, I don't think you could rank him ahead of Doyle. There is some reliever risk here. I had him number 14 on my list, which I think was one of the hotter grades I would imagine in the industry based on what I reflected on. I just think it's weird and it's going to work. Like, I think the Mets do a good job on the pitching development side, despite the fact I know that is not a popular opinion given how some of the trajectories of Peralta and Tong have gone this year, and Weininger really struggling at AAA and such. But he's a super high slot pitcher. Like, I got him up at like a 57 degree arm angle as a lefty, which I don't think there's a lot of guys up there. If they are, it's like Alex Vesia and some of these other dudes. But Santucci is a little weirder, where it's not like he gets on the side of the ball really nice. And the key pitch here is this slider. He's got this weird bullet slider thing. I have it like 88 to 89. He's got it up to like 92, and it's got like pure bullet shape. And it's a super steep approach into the zone, and he throws it a ton. This is partially why I think some of the zone stuff is suppressed, because this thing is just going to naturally fall below the zone more. You know, he's a chase reliant pitcher, and when he's in the zone, he generates miss. And when he's in the zone and there's contact made, it's ground balls. So this is the kind of profile that I think I'm most willing to accept low zone strike rates on, where it's like he does everything else well. Like, the zone miss is there, he gets chase out of the zone. When the contact's made, it's on the ground, he's hard to lift. So all that stuff works out. Is the fastball going to have some playability issues in the majors? Yeah, maybe. You know, like these higher slot guys, I do feel like as they ascend, that shape plays down most of the time. And I wonder where his ends up, or if they make any more adjustments to like lower slot. There's just not a lot of guys up at this kind of slot. And I feel like most of the ones we see up here eventually fall a little. We kind of saw this with Jonah Tong this year because he needed breaking ball shapes. But Santucci's slider is the weapon. Like it's a really good lefty slider. I think there's just enough fastball to work. I see him as like a 50 future value type, like 2.5-ish, 3 WAR kind of pitcher a season. And yeah, it's a little scary to bet on lowish zone here. I think there's some risk that it, you know, he's walking 3 guys and Kang 7 and he can't get through 5. But I guess my bet is more just like the shapes are sick, you know? Like, yeah. I think it's a weird look. I got him up at like a 6'5 release height as a lefty, which lines up with the arm angle I was saying. And
yeah,
I just think the slider's sick, man. Like, I'm just going to bet on stuff here, I think, is where my brain came to on him. Because it's not like egregious strike throw. It's not like Joey Volchko from the draft or something along those lines. It's like, no, he's, you know, it's maybe a 11% walk rate projection in the majors, but we've seen arms succeed like that, especially with this level of stuff. I think that's worth it from a risk standpoint.
And I think the point that you made just regarding ground balls, like, and it's every pitch in his arsenal is pretty much 50-60%+ ground ball rates. That adds a little efficiency that, you know, when you do get contact, you can get potentially multiple outs, right? Like, I feel like guys that walk a lot of bat, like I saw Harlan Suzano last week, for example.
What'd you think? Quick. I forgot. You were texting me about that.
I mean, it's turbo stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's ever going to be a starter. I don't think the Nats have any reason at this point not to try to develop him as a starter. They have some runway. They've had a little bit more success in the majors than I think they expected. They have some decent depth. They don't have to keep on pushing him, even if they have to add him to the 40-man roster. I do think that at a certain point, maybe they start to compete. He probably ends up in the bullpen. And, I mean, he is the kind of stuff that it could be Mason Miller. I mean, it was 103.
Sure, I agree.
And it's 103-mile-per-hour sinkers. So even when guys do make contact, they don't really elevate on him very well. And it's like an 88-mile-per-hour sweeper. And there's just tons of horizontal break, you know, both to both sides of the plate with the fastball and the sweeper. So, yeah, it's huge stuff. But, you know, I think the thing with him is he's gotten deep when he was starting and was like not injured a year ago. He would get deeper into starts, even when he would struggle with command from time to time, because he would get sinkers into the zone that, you know, guys would just beat into the ground. It would end up being 2 outs. So I do think that helps him a little bit with some of the command issues. At worst, he's probably going to be a really effective reliever, but I wouldn't close the door on starting. I think the thing that's interesting about him too, is he's a good athlete. He gets down the mound pretty well. So his angles are not as steep as you would anticipate with someone with that arm angle. So I almost wonder if it allows everything to play up a little bit. That said, he doesn't miss a lot of bats in the minors against his fastball. So I don't anticipate that's going to play up in the majors. But yeah, it's an interesting arsenal. It's, like you said, a crazy slider that if he gets to a point where he's throwing that 50% of the time, it wouldn't shock me. All right, let's move on to the next one and we'll take a quick break. This is a name that I know you mentioned you hadn't done a lot of work on. Lower minors guy. Was a big international signing for the Red Sox a few years ago. But Sabdel Delzine. Excuse me,
Delzine. We were talking about how to say it before we got on here.
Yeah, Sabdel Delzine. They were saying, I thought it was Delzine. They were saying Delzine on the broadcast last week as I was watching it. So I'm going to trust them that they know how to pronounce it better than I do. So Delzine, big right-hander, has had some success. There is fairly big stuff in the arsenal, a lot of velocity on the fastball. I got some notes on him, but I'm interested in your thoughts. I mean, he is a big boy for 18 years old, 6'5". He's listed at 200 pounds. I'd be shocked if he's a pound under like 225.
Yeah, the height weight projections are never accurate. I remember the days of New Hampshire putting Vlad and Bo at the same weight. This was probably, what was this year? Was this 2014? I don't even remember off the top of my head, but anyways,
I think it was 2017.
Was it 17? A little later than thinking. Yeah, they had those two guys at the same weight in the minors, which was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. But Yeah, this guy I hadn't really looked at. Like, I just, like, as I said, I kind of opened my list and I started doing the graduations, just pulling guys off that I could take off the rank. I haven't done the info gathering on, like, who am I missing, like, to consider. You know, I have, like, the pocket. You know, when you build a list, you have, like, 50 guys beyond the 30-year ranking that you're like, maybe I'm going to rank this guy. And I'm in the process of gathering that. So this is the name I'm going to put in there because I didn't really have too much on him prior. It's interesting. He seems to have this odd ability that some of these guys have. He reminds me a little bit of, this is a weird comp, but Ethan Kleinschmidt, who the Marlins took, where he has like this kind of more vertical-ish slot, but he just seems to have this ability to create like drop on everything else that he's throwing. He's got like the changeup with a bunch of depth. He doesn't really actually spin the ball well. I think Kleinschmidt from Oregon State, who went to the Marlins, spins the ball really well. So he's a little bit different in that sense, and he's a righty. Kleinschmidt's a lefty, but that similar idea of like, okay, it's a little higher slot. I have him up at like a 50-ish degree arm angle, which might be a little wacky because when the guy gets really big, my arm angle model gets a little muddied and such. But he's thrown really hard. It's really efficient on the four seam. And maybe that's why I'm a little surprised that the breakers have depth. You know, they're not crazy hard right now, but I do think there's iterations of this kind of pitcher where the breakers don't need to be crazy hard. It's just the velo, once you push in like this 12 mile per hour-ish plus velo differential and you're sitting at like the high 90s on your hard stuff, like I think that can work. And there's like okay strikes here too. So at that age, to have that strike feel, to have a decent four seam, to be sitting 96, you know, there's no spin. So I think it's literally just going to have to be power breakers. He seems to have some feel for that. The Red Sox, I think, do a great job on the pitching development side. So I'm intrigued. Like, it's interesting. There's something about him that my stuff model doesn't love, but I'm still learning about my own stuff model and what it likes and doesn't. It's more of like the guide. You know, it's like it's there, and I'm not entirely sure if I like it a lot of the time, but every now and then I'm like, okay, like that's telling me something I didn't think. What's all models are bad, some are useful. Like, my model's pretty bad, but I think occasionally it's useful. And that's all that matters to me is like, okay, I understand certain elements that it's telling me. And one thing it's telling me is that like I think he has weapons to work for his lefties. So if you're thinking about the long-term picture of him, I'm not too worried about it being like, oh no, he could get righties out, but there's no way for him to get lefties out. Like he seems to have some feel for that. And I imagine the Red Sox will be able to back him into a righty approach that'll work as well. So yeah, he feels like he's in that. You know, I struggle a little with these guys who are young. I'm not sure how you approach proximity. Yeah. I've definitely gone to like the, not to name a competitor here, but the Eric Longenhagen school of thought of like proximity matters, you know? So this dude was class A to single A. Like, I just generally discount these guys until I see them at high A. I think that the hitting level at class A is so bad that like, it's hard for me to believe oftentimes a lot of like, I got him at like 65th percentile and 70th percentile zone and zone miss. Or miss and zone miss. And it's like, yeah, that's good. You know, I just want to, can I just see that at high A versus better hitters in double A before I buy in? So I just tend to discount these guys where I'm like, I got to be blown away. I got to be like Seth Hernandez by him to be like, yeah, totally, let's go. And I'm not there with him, but he's definitely a name I'm going to have the back half of my radar here. He's probably in that like 50 to 70 or 80 overall pitching prospect specifically rank that I generally try to parse through. But Red Sox do a good job, man. They have pop-up arms like this, it feels like, every year. I still love my guy Dalton Rogers. What is he up to? Mr. Sliders at the top of the zone that no one ever cares about, but I think this strategy is going to work. He's getting crushed anyways, as I see at double A. Anyways, all right, besides the point.
I get bad news for you there.
Damn it.
Throwback to it name, though. I remember seeing Dalton Rogers in the cave. I agree with a lot of what you said there. I think that it's a lot of sort of velocity. There's some decent arm side on it, but there's not crazy shape. There's not crazy angles. It's not a guy that's getting like huge extension. Like, it's power and strikes, and he's going to be able to blow it by low A hitters. Even though he's 18 and probably younger than a lot of these guys, there's not a lot of those guys that are hitting like 96 to 97 consistently at the top of the zone. Height adjusted VAA is, you know, below average. It's reverse splits, though. And I think it was interesting that you mentioned that. Like, much better numbers in terms of production against lefties. Walks lefties a little bit more than he does against righties. I think some of that is the fact that the changeup isn't consistently in the zone. When it is, it could be a good swing and miss pitch. So, you know, like kind of like your classic pronator, kind of profile. Doesn't spin his breakers all that well. Has a, I had three different shapes. Bigger sweeper, like a shorter slider, and like a two plane breaking ball, but there was some power on all of them. The thing I thought I noted that I thought was most interesting about him, and this is stuff that within stuff models, et cetera, like we can't always pick up. And sometimes as you dig deeper as to why guys have success at stuff like this, he hides the ball really well. You know, cause he gets really deep over his back leg, almost like plunges a little bit and kind of hides the ball, behind his back hip really well. There's like an accentuated kind of layback and pause. So, I think that's kind of interesting. You know, maybe that's messing with, some low A hitters as well and doesn't necessarily translate as he gets up, but, something that I kind of had noted. All right, let's take a quick break here, Lance. And then when we come back, we have three more pitchers to talk and we'll be out of here.
SeatGeek is the official ticket marketplace for Major League Baseball. And anytime you want to go to a game, you should go to SeatGeek. I used to call the director of team travel. I used to call the traveling secretary, whatever they want to be called, KP, to try to get a seat. But on SeatGeek, I can pick my own seat and I can pick where I want to sit instead of being told where to sit.
Yeah, it's a great option. And summer is coming to an end here soon. I'm going out and finding all the day games possible, all the warm weather cities, so I could stay in this tank top. I can watch very competitive baseball. As the calendar turns into fall, I want to make sure that I get the most out of this tank top and warm weather, and SeatGeek is where I would go and get my seats.
You can use code TERRITORY10 for 10% off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off MLB tickets with promo code TERRITORY10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later.
All right, and we're back here with Lance Brozdowski talking pitching prospects. We've talked about Liam Doyle, Jonathan Santucci, and I'm going to try to do it again. Sabdiel Yelzine. I think I got it that time. Let's move on to an easier name to say for a guy like myself, Jamie Arnold. A little bit easier when you're a Yankee, you know. Jamie Arnold, first round draft pick out of Florida State. Highly touted college pitcher, same draft class as Liam Doyle and Kate Anderson that we talked about earlier. Also a lefty. So we've only had one righty that we've discussed.
Yeah.
We'll see if we get into some more, a couple more before the end of the show, maybe one, but mostly lefties. Talk to me about Jamie Arnold, because I have found this to be one of the harder evaluations, like not just for myself, but even for us, just like as a team, because we get a wide range of opinions on Arnold. We did pre-draft and I feel like we still get him in pro ball.
I struggle with him. Yeah, I had him 33 on my list, and it's that would be like the back half of my like 50 future value tier, which is again that like 2.5-ish WAR pitcher a year, which means I'm like not totally confident he hits that. I think I might downgrade him slightly. Like, I know the results have been good. It's a tough profile, man. Like, he just throws a bunch of sweeper, and like it's big extension. He's a small dude. The release height's really low. I was looking at Matt Wilkinson the other day, very different pitchers, but actually very similar release traits and similar, this is hilarious, not the same body type, but very similar body types from like a, if you look at the release traits, you're like, these guys are the same. And then you look at them and you're like, oh no, they're not the same. They're very different, very different humans from a, I don't know what's the word here standpoint, but, try to stay PC to Zoe said. Anyways, Arnold's a small dude. 4.9 release, 7 extension. He's up there. I struggle a little with just like, he's not generating as much miss as I thought he would in zone or just roughly. And I worry a little bit about that, despite the fact it seems like he's had pretty good batted ball results. And he does have a reasonable track record of like having success with this very weird profile. I just don't think he could do much with the ball from a manipulation standpoint. You know, the spins are all average. He does have the ability to like throw stuff hard. Like the sweeper is hard. It's like 85 to 86 on average. It's up to 90. It's not that big of a sweeper, which gets back to the point that he doesn't spin the ball that well. And that shape looks good. Like that is his primary pitch. Like his zone rate on that is roughly the same as his four seamer, you know, like he's a pitch backwards guy to some extent where he's going to probably throw you sweep early and then try to four seam you late. And it's a relatively flat VA because of the 4.9 release. It's not like crazy flat. because it's more like kind of too plain-y. He's just a weird arm, man. This is like, it's one where I don't really believe a stuff model because there's no one else throwing this. So like, what is it comping to? I think it's the problem we've run into a little with stuff models is like, they're reflect, like they're getting too good to the point where it's just like becoming, I don't know how to put this, but if you have a guy who has not, who has weird stuff, the sample of pitchers who also have weird stuff don't line up. So at the end of the day, the stuff model is just looking at the guy and being like, oh, I think this is Jamie Arnold because like no one else is throwing from this release height, you know, and the shape. So like your sample to go off small. So it's hard to get like validation on a pitcher who's weird. So this is like, it's a pure vibes one. It's like, if you like this profile, sure. Like I could see him being a top 20 pitching prospect for you where you're just like, no one else does this. I think that's valuable. My problem is just like, I wish there was more miss. Like if I saw more miss and my stuff model said it was awful, like I'd be like, I think I'm going to throw away the stuff model, but I'm kind of yeeped out on the chance that like what are you projecting the strikeout rate with him in the majors right now? Like, is it 19, 18% with a 9% walk rate? Like that's not a starter, you know? And is it good enough to be a reliever? He's like sitting 93.
Yeah.
So I struggle, man. Like I think I would probably downgrade him a little. I might put him in like the 45 plus tier, which is like, I think he could be a 50. I just need to see more. And I think for me, the seeing more would be, can you just miss more bats for me? I struggle, man. He's a really tough eval. He might be one of the harder evals, I think, on pitching prospect lists for a guy that isn't like way off to the point where like the range of outcomes is massive, you know?
Yeah. And I think you're right. Like there's questions like, how would this work in relief? I mean, like, I think it possibly could. I do think like the two fastball shapes is interesting.
They don't differentiate much though, right?
Well, no, there's about
five. You got a little more than I do.
Yeah, there's about 5 inches of like just clean, like just like,
that's what I have.
Vert off of the two. Height adjusted VAA. It's like maybe two delineations above average, while like the two seems like one. Like it's still pretty flat.
Yeah.
You seem fastball, but he's got a 62.6% ground ball rate on that. And a little bit and like 3 or 4 more inches of arm side. So there is some differentiating between the two. But you'd like to see a little more power on that four seam, even like another mile per hour
or
two would make a big difference just in terms of like how much better the outcome, like how much more sure you would be of the outcomes, like the percentile chance that he actually reaches that as a number three or as like a closer or something. Like regardless of where it goes, there's been a lot of turnover over the last few years, if I remember correctly, I don't cover the A's, but that's my recollection that they've had a few kind of smart people come in and then leave kind of quickly. Yeah,
they're going to have more or two coming up.
You wonder how much
looking for a director.
Yeah. How much consistency with messaging. I always wonder about that with certain players. Like we hear it about it in other sports, like with like quarterbacks, right? Like this guy's had like 4 offensive coordinators in 4 or 5 years. And then you kind of see the same thing with some of these pitching directors and coordinators. And it's like, are they taking a piece away from all those guys and kind of, you know, moving forward? Or is it like contrasting messages? And I wonder about that a little bit. So
I'll jump in quick. I will say Arnold's a driveline guy. I kind of wonder whether like, I don't know, is this a weird thing to say? I have no idea. I know I work for driveline, but like,
sure.
I just wonder whether he like doesn't really listen to maybe what the athletics are telling him. And he's just like, I kind of think I know a little better here, guys. I don't know. Just going to take a gamble. I mean, actually know. I'm not reporting this or anything, but
he played for like the most progressive team here on the Cape.
Yeah.
Team. So like, I think he generally is like, he's aware of like, you know, information data, utilizing that obviously if he's training with driveline too. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of refreshing to hear, but yeah, there's certain limitations here in terms of spin and power that, you know, despite like getting down the mound really well for a guy his size and kind of creating really weird angles on his fastball and just all of his pitches, he's not missing as many bats as you would hope. All right.
Him versus Santucci is kind of interesting because like, where do you guys have Arnold over Santucci on the BA top 100? Do you know?
Yes, we do. Some of that is like, this is a bad way to put it, but the half-life of like draft rankings that it takes.
Yes.
Because you,
I know MLB runs into this too. I've heard pipelines.
Yeah, and I feel like you have to be really bad for for us to just like tank you. Where like yes. if you track it throughout a year, it's more like progressive move downs and how these next couple months go, and then the feedback that we get early on in the process of like the off season lists will probably dictate where he is in the top 100. You know,
yeah, you can't invalidate the draft ranks. I get what you're saying. That's an interesting combo to me because they're it's kind of pick your guy. Where like Arnold's a little more zone, but he's not missing bats. Santucci's a little less so, maybe more relief risk. But like, I'm pretty confident that dude's gonna have like a 26% strike rate in the majors. My lean is Santucci pretty clearly. And I feel like I'm waiting for lists like BA and Pipeline and others to kind of update that prior on Arnold. Yeah. And I'm wondering if it just happens next year, if Santucci comes out and it's like, oh, he actually might get a rotation spot, or we'll try him in like a short role or something. So that's my lean. Like those guys, although they're very different, like completely low slot, completely high slot, they're similar in template of pitcher, I think, such that you could compare them one-to-one and kind of be like, get a good read on how you evaluate a pitcher by asking someone's opinion on Arnold and Santucci and saying, who would you rank over one or the other? You know, that's like, I think I like those guys who could like line up on 1v1s pretty easily and get a read on like analysis flavor, you know?
Yeah. I think that's really accurate, especially with like two different types of lefties that are like both like very slider heavy, of course, but different types of sliders, how they get there is a little bit different. And both ACC guys as well, right?
So yep.
There you go. Let's move on to the next one, Lance. I know we've had some conversations about this guy over the years. Has been a teenage pitching phenom for the Royals. That's Kendry Churio. The numbers have been really good. He's really performed. He throws a hard fastball. It's super fastball heavy. He might actually be more fastball heavy than Liam Doyle is.
I got a lot more heavy.
Not great angles, doesn't really miss a lot of bats. Like the fastball misses a reasonable amount of bats and gets way more chase than you would expect. I think that's the most shocking thing, but not like it's not crazy miss. And his secondaries are kind of below average. I'm less into this profile than others are. I understand the age to level and performance and kind of all that stuff. I think we kind of agree on this one. I'm a little less optimistic about him being any more than like a number four or number five, and command might get him there as a number four or number five, command and power. But I've been wrong about guys like this before too.
He's the one that I'm most worried I'm wrong about. I think, you know, like I'm in it with you on this concept of like, I generally don't love this profile, but I was looking at, on the MLB side, Brandon Pfaadt, who really struggled last year, had good peripherals, came back up this year, you know, was terrible, and then got sent back down, and now he's like rolling all of a sudden. And I like, every time I look at Brandon Pfaadt, I'm like, is there some level of zone that a pitcher can get to on their fastball that like invalidates everything else what we think we can critique about the guy? Like Brandon Pfaadt throws like is in this area of like 65-70% zone on his four spot. I could be slightly wrong. I think it's around there this season at least. Churio, I have it like 66% zone on his four-seam fastball. I have that as like 98th percentile among four-seamers. I have a strike rate overall at like 98. Like it's just like such zone. I am in zone. Like here is pitch in zone. Good luck. And hitters are just like, I'm used to seeing dudes at A-ball walk 15% of the guys I'm seeing. Like this is insane. I'm already down 0-2. It's 1-2, you know? And that is, maybe there's some value in that. Like I don't think Pfaadt stuff is good. You know, and it's like he was dominating for the last nine starts he's had, because he was just like, I don't really care if I don't miss bats. Like it's just in the zone. And I'm betting that the hitters are bad and not going to make adjustments. And the reality is like, hey, there's a lot of teams you can't hit in baseball. And it's like, you just put stuff in the zone. Like maybe this works. So I'm very aware of that case that exists on Churio. And despite that, I actually have him ranked one spot above Jamie Arnold. I definitely think I have him lower than probably the industry, given how much I think most other sites have kind of really risen on him.
Yeah.
But it's just tough, man. Like I think my hot take on him, I think that I wrote earlier this year, is that I think there's a chance that everything he's throwing now is like not actually what he's throwing when he gets up. I had this weird theory that he's like a super slider guy, right? Where he's like, it's 100%. Like right now I have a 64% four seam and 22% curve. I think there's a non-zero chance in 2 years, he's 64% sinker and 30% sweeper or he just goes to like massive mix because he can actually get on the side of the ball and spin it. So it's like, it's a weird profile where like, okay, he has results. He's in the zone a ton, but I don't think this is going to look like what's going to look like in the majors. So I how do I, if that's where it's hard to eval him. The release traits are terrible. Like there's angles play down. He doesn't miss any bats in the zone, despite the fact he's in the zone.
Yeah.
So I just struggle, man. He's a really weird pitcher, but it's completely unprecedented from like a strike standpoint. Like I was looking back and I think I had it in a prior Substack piece where like the only pitcher to hold this high of like a strike rate and zone rate since like 2016 or whatever, since we have minor league data, is like Yuri Perez way back. It's like him and Yuri sub age 19 or 20, you know? So there's some, maybe that is like enough to care about him. But I struggle. I just struggle. And I don't know. Like, I'm very aware of both cases, and I'm just Switzerlandian playing the difference and going like, sure, you can have him in the 55 tier. If you want to rank him top 10, I actually think there's a case where you're just like, listen, I don't care. I just think he's going to pound zone and he will walk 4% of the batters he faces. And even if it's a 20% strikeout rate, 18% strikeout rate, that's still an above average K walk. And like, that could work. I'm totally fair with that. I'm also fair if you're like, this is a terrible pitcher and he will never make it because this stuff's awful. And I'd be like, totally fine, man. I get you. Like, he's one of the few that I see the full range of outcomes here, and I don't know where I land, but I land in the middle.
I think it's a big leaguer. I just think it's more of like a back end starter that lights up the radar gun. I do agree. I think he's ultimately going to end up a sinker guy long term. I think you just look at the traits and everything. Yeah. Just eventually, that's not to say that he'll scrap the four seam altogether, but it would just become a bigger part of the arsenal, be able to get more prime balls. And yeah, there's another breaking ball in here. Maybe even like three fastball shapes. Like, could he throw like a cut fastball type of
stuff? Yeah, what would that look like? Because he hasn't, do you have him throwing like no short breaker, right? Like, I have zero short breakers. It's just the big curve.
Yeah.
So I just want to see what the cutter shape looks like, you know?
Yeah. It would be an interesting pitch for him to add for sure. All right. So there we go. That's our Kendry Churio take. I promised it'd be 40, 45 minutes. One more name, one more left-hander before we get out of here. This has been one of the bigger pop-up names, breakout names among pitching prospects in the minors this year. Got some good reporting from my colleague Ian Kundle when he was down in spring training. But Caden Hunter from the Orioles seems like another Orioles pitching find. And this might be the best to date in terms of a guy that was kind of off the radar of like top two round type of pick. So I'm not going to count Joseph Jerzwa within that, who obviously has been phenomenal this season. One of the better pitching prospects performance-wise in the minors. I love Caden Hunter up in Double-A performing now. It's a huge fastball, but he's got three different secondaries. He'll throw fairly consistently in the slider, changeup, and kind of more of a downer curveball, but got some power, ball. Like 82 to 83. Misses bats with all those pitches, gets above average chase rates on all those pitches. And I'd say it's about average command. And the outcomes actually against all of his pitches are really good as well. So what are your thoughts on Cade Hunter? I honestly think I like him more than a lot of guys that we've already talked about that are ranked higher than him on a list.
Yeah, man, I find the Orioles system kind of weird. I had four pitchers of theirs ranked from like 30 to 50 on my list, 30, 35 to 50. I had De Leon in there, who's always been a love of mine, but it seems like they're pushing him to a reliever for a bit now. Bateman was one that I had a couple people be like, this dude's really good.
Yeah.
Jerwa, I was really struggling with him. I just wrote him up recently, and I'm definitely going to move him up. The results are just too good. I wonder if I'm just missing angles there. And Trey Gibson was always a love of mine, but I just think he's bad now, unfortunately. But they have this weird theme of like, a lot of their dudes just don't have great four-seam shapes. I don't know if this is like a thing, but and if you look at like macro zoomed out Orioles data in the minors, they have like some of the highest release heights.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether there's something going on there where their model, a lot of the time people tell me like when I ID these things and I text someone from the org about it, they're like, well, we're not really like valuing it, but it's like clearly a residual from their models in terms of how they're valuing pitchers holistically, you know? And I think that's really what it is. It's like, it's a byproduct of what the model spits out on a guy. It's like, for some reason, however they built it, however their R&D team works, it's like, hey, we actually think these high slot guys are really good. It's kind of like the Cubs in the cut fastball. It's like, hey, maybe from a dollar per war standpoint, this is actually the most efficient way to approach pitching right now because the velo is overpriced or whatever. Maybe that's internally what they think. I don't know. But like, how else do you arrive at having just everyone cut their fastball in that org? Similar with the Orioles, where it's like, a lot of these dudes have four-seam fastballs that work, and then they get up to the majors or close to the majors. I think of like a Chase McDermott or Trey Gibson's a great example where that pitch just completely fell off when he touched the major league ball, and I have no idea why, and no one knows why, because now it's just like not a pitch in his mix anymore. It doesn't make any sense to me. He looked like one of the best pitching prospects in baseball, in my opinion, a year and a half ago, and now he's like,
I don't know
if he's top 50. Maybe he breaks a bazillion bats, but I'm not sure that matters if he can't miss any of the bats that he's breaking. And I think the reason I'm bringing all that up is because Hunter seems like a bit of a deviation from that, where the four seems good. I really like it. It's a similar template to like Liam Doyle from a pitcher standpoint. You know, it's a little higher slot. There's like a good fastball. The breakers aren't crazy spin, but he holds enough elo on him. Doyle's a better spin. He's got strikes, as you're saying. There's zone miss. There's good contact quality. Like, I think this is a good, clear pop-up name that should probably be top 100 on, like, everyone's list, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's, like, it may just take time for people to, like, reallocate the names and be, like, are we comfortable pulling some dude who's not good anymore or, like, just was paid $5 million and now 2 years later is not good? And putting a Caden Hunter on, like, sometimes that reconciliation's tough. And I get that from a list-making standpoint. But he looks great. Like, I think I would have – would you have Jirwa higher or him? That's a great question.
See, I actually think I like Jirwa. I think there are interesting angles.
Yeah,
it's weird, right? In terms of, like, how he sets up so closed all the way on the first base side. There's just some weird stuff to it. There's obviously, like, some tunneling effects between, like, the fastball and the changeup. There's a huge separation in terms of, like, plane and approach angle on those two pitches. So I think, like, that's what's really playing up, but, like, he doesn't have anything that moves glove side really that's consistent. Yep. And there isn't, like, a power breaker here or anything. Like, I think what happens because of, like, and I love all different types of prospect coverage. This is not a critique, but I think what does happen is because of, like, all the charts and numbers and tweets and videos and everything else, we get so caught up in, like, who's the best in the minors as opposed to, like, who projects to be the best major league player when they're 25 years old. And I feel like Hunter does. Like, of all the eight names that we talked about today, the only name I'd have above Hunter is Liam Doyle. And I'll say
he's
closer to Doyle than he is to the other four guys.
Yeah. I might take Santucci, but it's a good point because, like, I do think that's one thing that I think is really hard on prospect lists is, like, how much am I believe? Like, I think my cadence in my head is, like, further away from majors, way more stuff-based. As you get to AA and AAA, if you're showing me good, like, results despite poor stuff, I have to come back on my dial a little, you know?
Sure.
Like, if Jirwa gets up to AAA and he's still punching all these dudes, like, and he still holds, like, a 24% K walk, like, I think the bet there is correct. Like, we saw this a couple years ago with, like, Savage and Tolley and Tong. Like, if I'm 2 for 3 on those outcomes where all those guys crushed AAA and now two of them are good and Tong's kind of lost, like, I think that's a fair bet to make. Like, you're telling me 2 in every 3 of those dudes who have, like, absurd K walks at the high minors. Just, and, you know, like, Savage's stuff was weird. Tolley's stuff was always good, but it was developing. Tong's stuff was always fine, but developing. But, like, all those guys had, like, good stuff. You know, I guess I'm saying, like, I agree with you. Like, I think if you get to AAA and you could put up results, like, I have to correct a little bit. You know, there's something the hitters are telling me that is not caught in my stuff model, and I have to be aware of it. But I think you're right on Hunter. Like, that is the template of pitcher that you look at and go, like, the stuff lines up and the results look really good. So, like, why would I not be on him in the top 25 of a pitcher rank, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's power. He's a really good mover. There's plenty of strikes. There's a lot of chase on pitches outside the zone. So, you know, and it's not – his last start was a little funky. I've watched probably, like, the last 5 or 6, and I'm always kind of with these guys that I'm tracking throughout the year. You know, I have Synergy. I'm diving into Synergy stuff. The last start was weird. He struggled a little bit against not a particularly strong Richmond lineup, which is the Giants AA affiliate. So he only struck out 2. He had 2 swinging strikes and 2 strike counts, but he got into a ton of 2 strike counts. That he had 14 fouls against him in 2 strike counts. But that hadn't been what I had seen previously. I talked to a scout that was there that kind of called to like, I think he might be a little gassed. Like he's, you know, blew past his sort of like innings max in previous seasons and all that sort of thing. So, you know, there could be some like, or it could just have been a bad start where like it just, the slider wasn't as sharp, you know, the curveball, the changeup just wasn't working like it typically does. The fastball did, like he set himself up into a lot of two strike counts, but once he got there, he couldn't blow it by guys. So that was the first time that I've seen kind of a wrinkle, because otherwise it's been strikes. It's been swing and miss. It's been swing and miss in the zone. He's gotten swing and miss against the fastball, against, you know, secondary shapes that move, you know, down glove side, arm side. And he gets pretty good extension as well. It's like 6'7", 6'8" extension. So, you know, there's a lot to like here. Yeah, so I think ultimately that's why I kind of lean with a pitcher like this that has all these traits versus other guys who maybe have more pedigree, more hype, maybe a few more years worth of performance. You know, with pitching, when it comes together, it kind of can move pretty quick. So, yeah, I don't know what it was that clicked, but Hunter's been in like an absolute steal for them. So good.
What's your read on the O's system? Where'd you rank them from a development standpoint? If you're just off the cuff, pitching specifically.
I think the pitching side of things has been better than people realize.
I agree. But I just don't know how high. Like, they don't have a name they've developed, right? Like, there's no one that I'm like, great, they finally did it with this guy. Yeah, therefore, I mean, can see if they can do with others.
Do you want to count Bradish as like a, not really. Like, he was already kind of there. I think that they certainly have made like Rogers and some other guys like
Brandon Young is like kind of okay. Yeah. You know? Like he was terrible. Now he's like serviceable. Yeah.
They got some serviceable years out of Dean Kremer. They've just, never shop at the top of the market with pitchers in terms of like free agents they gone after, guys in the draft, like the different acquisition windows. They're not ever shopping at like the top of like the talent pool in terms of at least perceived talent with pitchers. But they've done a good job, I think, of accumulating a lot of interesting guys,
a lot of names, stuff.
and like a fatal flaw. You know, it's like Jersey is kind of like the perfect shining example of this. We're like, we don't know about the breaking ball, but there's like three other elements with this that are really, really good, and maybe this works or maybe it doesn't. They obviously went out and they acquired some high end talent with Ianson and some others, but
yeah,
I mean, this is, this is a system that has a lot more pitching than I think people realize. This might be the best test of their pitching development yet, because they sort of have the horses at this point that they didn't before, just with names they've acquired and, you know, some of these draft picks and how they've looked. So
huge, huge, like 2 to 3 year window for them. Massive. Yeah. They have to get three of these guys into the rotation to make them cost controlled and be good. Otherwise it's like, I got duped by them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it seemed like it was like all in 2 years ago, and the last 2 years have just been really tough for their major league club. And you have to wonder if they're going to bounce back or if this window's closing and all of a sudden all these, you know, bright young stars end up being bright young stars other places once they come to free agency, which is now, crazy enough, only a couple of years away. But Lance, let's wrap this up. Tell the people where they can find you, plug your work, and let them go.
Yeah, for sure. Substack's the main one I've been pushing people to. Also have a YouTube channel that is like maybe once a week or so. I toss up something more kind of long for me and fun. And yeah, I'm on the socials too. So pretty much anywhere. It's all under Lance Broz is usually where you can find me. So yeah.
Well, thank you again for joining me. It's been great to hop on the air. Good again.
Catch up, man.
Yeah, catch up a little bit and talk about some interesting pitching prospects. Hopefully everybody out there got something out of this. This is Jeff Ponce for Baseball America. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
All new drinks are now at McDonald's, with refreshers like the strawberry watermelon refresher and the mango pineapple refresher with popping boba, to crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast with berry flavors and cold foam. Who knew ice-cold drinks could be so fire? 6 all-new drinks are here now at McDonald's.
Refreshers contain caffeine.